welcome everyone to the HCC Inside Pulse Wrestling Pulsecast. I'm your host, Matthew Herrick. Once again here with Justin Cervenka. Cam could not be with us here tonight, unfortunately. But again, like we said, we're on the road to WrestleMania, and we would have a special guest for you every single week. Before we get to our guest this week, which I cut off before our show talking, introducing our guest to Justin, and I kind of shut him down and her down, and I felt a little bad about that. But before we get to our guest, Justin, how has the week been? We have not too much to talk about. There's some things going on right now, but I think it's we're right at the cusp of things really kicking into high gear and seeing what we have laid out for the next couple weeks. But how satisfied are you with the past week in the world of wrestling?
To me, it was almost like they wanted just to get through this show to kind of get into everything else for WrestleMania season. They knew going in with CM Punk leaving, this was going to be a Chicago crowd that wanted to see him, and we're going to chant his name all night and try to, quote-unquote, hijack the show. I think they were just trying to get through this week before they got all of the other pieces together when they were laying out the rest of the road to WrestleMania. I still think somebody's going to get added to the world title match for the simple fact that there's no way that's going to happen, even if it doesn't main event the show, that's still going to be just not very watchable at all. So I still think something somewhere is going to happen down the line. They're teasing this week Hulk Hogan doing an announcement for WrestleMania. Who knows? And that could just be something like not even mentionable, like, you know, there's a musical guest or somebody else is joining in to host the show. Who knows? But I think starting this week, you're going to see everything else kind of finally start to set in place. You're going to get an official announcement for Cena and Bray Wyatt. You're going to either get an official announcement with Daniel Bryan and Triple H, or you're going to get somebody added to the WWE title match. I think you'll slowly start to see things finally start falling into place. Maybe something will finally happen with the Shield. Who knows? But to me, you know, I thought Raw, like I said, was one of those shows where they just wanted to get through it and pray that the crowd just didn't completely take over. And the first hour that they delivered on Raw, with the Usos winning the tag titles with Shield and Wise right away, kind of almost took the crowd out of it to begin with, because they kind of gave them the stuff that they wanted, and then it kind of fizzled down from there. You know, as far as the CM Punk stuff goes, at this point, unless something completely changes and somebody says something, I got the feeling that he's not going to be back for WrestleMania. Oh, and he's probably not going to be back for the foreseeable future, unless, like, you know, they just wanted to surprise people and ship it off for another week or two just so Chicago wasn't so obvious. But like I said, I think they just wanted to get through this past week in Chicago, and starting this week, you're going to finally start to see things get firm and locked into place for WrestleMania.
Yeah, I thought they handled themselves very professionally. I thought the way they addressed it and the way everything played out worked to their benefit rather than detriment as far as being in Chicago. I know there's been random reports of people saying they drowned out the audience and blah, blah, blah. Honestly, what they did, and I can tell you we do it too at college basketball games and at college football games, is all they did was turn off the microphone on the cameras, so you couldn't hear the crowd as much as you normally do. So it wasn't that they were drowning out or actually muting the crowd. It was just like, hey, we don't need all this ambient noise distracting television viewers, so we'll just do it from the truck. So there wasn't a big conspiracy thing. They handled it the way they wanted it to, the way they had to, and I think they did a good job of addressing a very, very controversial situation right now, and was able to do it in a classy manner, or I don't know if you could call Paul Heyman classy, but was able to do it in a manner where they were able to turn real life into a wrestling angle very quickly and get on with the show, and that's what they needed to do. And speaking of CM Punk, even though we will not be going too far into the current situation, kind of ties into our guest our guest tonight, who has done some work with Punk, has done some work with Daniel Bryan, has done some work on her own, has done some work with Marvel, with DC, with pretty much anybody you could think of, Dark Horse, The Simpsons, rather well-known artist, comic book artist, and graphic novelist, Jill Thompson joins us this week for our top three segment in WrestleMania, leading up to WrestleMania. Jill, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on, and I'm so glad we were able to get this finally worked out together.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me on. Don't forget Mick Foley. I've done work with Mick Foley. We always like to do a plug, some cheap pop for Mick Foley.
Yep.
So, several books, a lot of illustrations. He's a great guy. So, always happy to work with him, too.
Well, I was just going to say, like, now that he's not under contract, that we definitely need to start pushing his stuff too, just so he gets those royalty checks back in there. And hey, if you ever want to make a phone call, and get him on our show, I'm more than happy to leech off of that. But besides the point, I wanted to get into, before we get into our topic of the night, I wanted to get a little background on how you got into the world of wrestling, considering what your background is. And obviously we know
what is my background what is my background that seems so unusual that I wouldn't be into wrestling.
Well, not into wrestling, I meant as far as designing wrestling outfits. It just seems
I see.
That's what I meant. Not so much just the being a fan. I meant more of going into actually becoming part of the show and seeing your stuff come off of a page and be in a wrestling ring. How did that all start to come together?
That is pretty amazing to see. So let me just put that out there. You know, to draw something and then suddenly have somebody wear it and have it be actually well received, have people like it, is really cool. So I have the best, you know, like when I play dress up, I have the best dolls in the whole world. Which I have. Daniel Bryan is my awesome kind of like Ken doll to dress up and be on television. I wish it was a more exciting story than it actually is, but it's actually pretty, you know, interesting. It shows the power of social media. One day, I forget who, my friend Joanne, who knows Brian, sent me a text to a blog called Hot Nerds Reading Comics, and it happened to be Brian Danielson, reading an issue of the comic I do with Evan Dorkin for Dark Horse called Beasts of Burden. And I was like, I was totally freaked out and got all blushy and was like, oh, that's great. And then my friend Joanne also said, oh, he's on Twitter. So I found him on Twitter and just sent him a message out there into the Twitterverse that said, oh, my God, you're reading Beasts of Burden. You get any sketch of your favorite character that you like. And he sent me back a message that said, really? And I was like, yeah, this is no fooling. And so then we direct messaged each other to exchange info. And so I did him a painting of Jack, the beagle. And then just and we exchanged like phone numbers and junk, so we wouldn't have to go through Twitter all the time. And he texted me a message later on that said, hey, you're an artist and you draw cool stuff. Do you think we could talk about you designing some wrestling gear for me? And I was like, you know, let me get up off the floor now that I've had, you know, like that would be really cool. And I was like, sure. Like, what are you going for? Is it, do you want to stick with your, you know, indie wrestling colors? Or is there a character that you're going to come up with or whatever? And he told me the kind of guidelines that he wanted to stick with and colors, you know, he did want to stick with his colors. And then I just kind of started free associating from there. And I kind of based it off of the American Dragon in Ring of Honor, and without using those terms, without using the name, because we all know if you use anything in the WWE, they get to keep it, and we didn't want them to keep the name of that. So I was kind of just basing it on an image, like what's an American Dragon? And I thought, of course, I could go with something really dragony, but I said, what's an American Dragon? What do Americans do that the rest of the world has always loved? And that was a hot rod, so a muscle car. And I thought, well, Brian's really, you know, kind of classically good-looking, all-American type of guy. He's got that, like, Paul Newman, Steve McQueen kind of vibe to him. And I was like, yeah, he should be just, like, a white T-shirt, pair of faded jeans guy, and, like, 1966 Mustang. And I was like, oh my God, a 1966 Mustang, red and white Mustang with white stripes on it. And then what I decided I was going to do is I was going to turn that car into gear. And that was the first gear that I designed for him. And he really liked it. And then I just started making things as variations of that. And then he would have input, and he started telling me stuff that he kind of wanted to add and or things that were, you know, he was thinking about, and just kind of had this really good give and take with him, and then just kept making more and more and more. And I think at this point I've done like 13 sets of gear for him. Wow. I'm not sure if all of them have been on TV. I may have done more. There might be like 15 or so, but I'm trying to think of how many have actually, like, he's actually had made and been on TV. So it's always really exciting. And the guy that made the gear, I love him because he likes I have sewn some things in the past. I have some rudimentary sewing skills, so I know how hard it is to use certain fabrics and do certain things. So I always tried to keep that in mind when I was designing stuff. And then I knew that stuff that I didn't even know if the fabric existed. So I was always really aware of that. So all the drawings that I've done, but they're actually like colored little painting things of different versions of it. So I would always put all these notes in the margin all over the place, like to the guy that made the gear and then to Brian himself about like what I was thinking and why I chose this for him. Or and then I sometimes would draw a picture of him wearing it so we would know exactly how, you know, where it was supposed to hit on, you know, like if it was a jacket or trunks or pads or something like that.
Yeah, and I remember
it was all an accident.
I remember,
really.
I remember the big one I remember is probably the one time he really changed up his gear was WrestleMania 28 when he came out with the jacket. I'm guessing that was you.
WrestleMania 28?
Yeah.
Was not a jacket. That was not last year, but the year before, right?
Right. It was like a long vest thing.
WrestleMania
28.
I forget what year we're up to.
It was, we're on 30. It was
we're on
the 30. One in
Miami. Okay, so last year it was... Okay, right. It was the outside one. He was fighting Sheamus. AJ distracted him. Well, now you're getting to this, of course, is one of my picks as my favorite WrestleMania gear is Brian's WrestleMania robe, the 18-second robe that took like 8 weeks to make. I was so sad that he only got to see, like, I hope everybody paid attention to him walking down that ring because I know I was glued to the set so I could see. He was like, oh, I hope he turns around because I know that Robert has spent, you know, 37 hours, you know, attaching rhinestones with a very toxic-smelling glue that he may have given a brain damage to that. And then bang, zoom, it was gone and done. So I was like, oh, no. I told Brian, I was like, okay, if you're never going to wear that again, can I wear it at San Diego Comic-Con? Because I really want people to see it.
Well, that one was, it seemed like, I think that robe actually got more screen time than the match itself. So I guess you could mark that up as a win.
I told him I was hoping. sorry, I was hoping that after that match he would be so angry. I was hoping they were going to do some kind of an angle where he was crazy afterwards, like he couldn't believe that he was cheated out of that time, and that he would just do nothing but wear that ring, that robe around for like the next few weeks. But they don't do angles like that anymore, where things go on and on. I would love to see him just like continue to insist that he was the champion and that he won, and that he couldn't. He would completely deny that, you know, that whole Sheamus thing ever happened. And I said, and then you could just kind of go crazy and just wear it everywhere. They should show you like wearing it on the road or going into a gas station with it on in every place, just because you're the champ.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I could see somebody like Mick Foley doing that, where it just starts out as just I'm going to be wearing it. It's all nice, and then you find out that he's actually wearing it everywhere, and there's random food stains, and it's starting to fall apart.
Oh,
and
my God.
that definitely would have played out well, but I think he's on a pretty good course for himself.
Oh, gosh,
if
yeah.
All indications point that way. You mentioned before we went on the air how big of a wrestling fan you were, and we kind of jumped right off of that because I didn't want to get into it before the show started. But I wanted to know, like, I know you're a wrestling fan and everything else, but when did it start? When did it kick in? And, like what has kept you around this long? Because I know so many people have faded away or grown out of it at certain times and have just given up on it. And it seems like you're one of those people who, like us, enjoy not only WWE, but also independent wrestling and being able to actually see guys hone their craft and connect with an audience.
There are times where it fades out a little bit and fades back in because I'm busy and traveling and doing some stuff, and sometimes I'll realize I haven't caught up. Plus, I'm not a fully committed every WWE program watcher, because I don't have that much time in my life to watch, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Oh, you have the app. Oh, there's Friday SmackDown. Oh, there's Saturday morning, whatever. I like to go to live events. I usually, I watch Raw. I watch some, TNA as far as wrestling goes. I like to see independent wrestling when I can. I guess because having been a nerd and never stopped being a nerd, liking comic books makes it really easy to like wrestling, and liking soap operas. Those are my two big, nerdy things that I like. One of the many nerdy things I like to do, actually. They push all those right buttons for me. I love the storyline. I like the athleticism. I like all the stuff that's over the top. It'd be your armchair booking. And then, luckily, I've gotten to meet many wrestlers. I mean, comic book world and wrestling world overlap a lot, and there's kind of some mutual fandom happening every now and again. You'll meet a wrestler that's a really big comic fan, and then, of course, then I can talk about the stuff that I like that they do, and they can go, oh, my gosh, and talk comics. So once I had like a personal connection, then it's like I really want to make sure that I'm watching and supporting the people that I know, and it's exciting, it's fun. I mean, I have a tough time with questions like this because people will ask me the same thing about comics, like why comics? Why did people fell away from comics? And you have kept reading them. And my answer is usually turning the question around is like, I can't tell you why I kept reading comics. I have to ask you, why did you stop? And they're like, oh, well, I probably, I got involved with girls or boys or whomever, and sports or different activities. I said, yeah, I liked all those things. My life moved in all those directions, but I always kept reading these things. So I don't know why you dropped away. To me, it's just a good form of entertainment. And to me, wrestling is just a genre of entertainment. It's like watching my other favorite shows during the week that might be a Viking show or, you know, a sports show or whatever. It's like wrestling is your wrestling show.
It's just always had that stigma about it, and it's getting to the point now where entertainment is so widely ranged that I think wrestling is becoming a part of that acceptable form of entertainment, where people, it's widely known that it's pre-scripted, it's widely known that these guys are natural athletes and do hone their craft. And there's no more of that little fake line in between. It's not as cartoony as in the 80s, but it's not as edgy as it was in the 90s. So it's fallen in that nice medium where pretty much anybody can watch.
It's a brand.
Yeah.
And I think that's it's a brand. So people like brands. They have brand loyalty. You know, people that like McDonald's go to McDonald's. I don't want to compare it in a bad way, but what I'm saying, it's become acceptable, I think, because of celebrity and fame. And they've done a really good job of creating products where if you say, I'm a professional wrestler, people have a good idea of what that means. So they don't have to even search for that kind of a thing in their head. They might be a little bit off, like, oh, isn't that so fake, will be probably the first thing that they say. And then as everybody we know goes, yes, and my, you know, broken disc in my back or my fake hip will attest to it's so completely fake. but I think they just don't know how to call it, you know, they don't know how to describe it. By fake, I think they mean it's a scripted outcome versus, you know, and of course, you know, you're not beating someone until they're dead, but you are doing something really physical where you may get injured or you definitely have repetitive stress injuries.
And people don't necessarily think
about that, but they recognize the person from somewhere, whether it's the regular programming or the other ways that the wrestlers are used. I'm trying really hard not to use the word superstar because the WWE has been almost ingrained in my head to call them that, which, you know, I'm going to start calling all of the comic book people I know superstars, like Marvel Comics superstar, Scotty Young. And you know, he's a comic superstar, Brian Azzarello. I'll be like, oh, that's right. We're not a penciler or a creator. We're a superstar.
How weird is it to be watching a show and not just see your work on screen, but see people you know and people you've become friends with just out there and to them doing their day job and living their dream, but to everybody else, they're celebrities. I mean, you're watching guys who are, well, you think as a fan, you think these guys are millionaires who are making loads of money and are on national television and worldwide on pay-per-view and absolutely amazing. And you're like, hey, I just had lunch with them the other day. Is that a weird dynamic to go back and forth in between, or is it just fun to see your friends on television doing what they love?
I'm really proud of everybody that I've become friends with for all of their fame and celebrity and all the good things that it brings, but I also know the downside of things that happen. I've known Mick Foley for a really long time now, and yes, there are many perks that come with standing next to somebody who is that kind of celebrity. The best time was Mick, being an avid roller coaster fan, wanted to go to Great America on his way mm-hmm. to a signing in Milwaukee. So he flew into Chicago, scooped us all up, and said, you want to go to Great America? Or actually, I think I picked him up at the airport. And then he arranged it so he could go to Great America, and then in enough time so then eventually we could drop him off at his signing. So you walk into an amusement park, which is a gigantic thing and millions of people, well, not millions, but, you know, and you got to go through the back of the line to the front of the roller coaster on every single ride because he had, like, a certain amount that he could, you know, like, certain amount of time that he could be there and, like, a certain amount of coasters that he wanted to hit. So they arranged for him to come up with, like, a handler to go in each one,
yep.
which was, I'm never going to be able to go to an amusement park again where I have to stand in line for anything. I'm very spoiled. However, whenever he was someplace, like, the minute the ride was over and you exited on the way at the end of the, you know, little way to get out of the roller coaster, there were hundreds and hundreds of people standing there, like, waiting, and everybody wanted something from him, and he couldn't, you know, you can't sign an autograph for everybody, or call, the big thing everyone wanted to do, because this was, like, before, like, phones were really equipped to take really good pictures, everyone wanted him to call and leave a message on their brother's answering machine or their sister's answering machine, or call their wife or call my mom or my dad. They're your biggest fan. And how can you do that? And, you know, so you have to go, or he can't go to a restaurant without somebody coming up while he's eating to, you know, want an autograph or do something. So he, you know, it's like a lot of privacy for everybody. I mean, I'm pretty positive Punk can't go anywhere. I mean, he must be in a hole right now because every place he goes, somebody's going to want to spot him. But, you know, there's good things and bad things to it. I mean, I don't have that kind of celebrity, so to me, I'm always happy when I see somebody, you know, wanting to do something nice for a friend of mine, but then I can also see the downside of it where they never get any privacy. And just because you do something that everybody likes doesn't mean that they should be able to butt into your every single moment, because everybody's, like, everybody I know is very accommodating when they try and be as nice as possible, but you have to be able to keep traveling or driving or walking through the airport or going to a place where you can eat or see a concert without becoming the weird sideshow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that. It's one of those thin lines, and I think it's something, and obviously I can't speak for Punk, but it seemed like one of those, I think I saw it on his DVD that was released, that he wanted all of this, but then he didn't want all the extra stuff that went with it. So it's a hard line to really balance, and I can understand why guys get burned out and guys don't want to deal with it and push it off. And we've had Dundas Page and Dick Roberts.
Pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
People get, I mean, you know, it's like if you can't sign an autograph for them, then suddenly you're the worst guy in the world, or they're calling you a dick, or, you know, or then suddenly getting online and, you know, saying, oh, he was an asshole to me, or something like that. It's like, no, he has a connecting flight, or he signed, you know, 500 of these things. You know, he can't spend his life doing that. I read the same thing, type of thing about Charles Schulz, creator of, you know, mm-hmm. Peanuts and Snoopy. He couldn't go anywhere without someone asking him to please draw something. And I know what that feels like at a comic book convention, because that's where people know me. And maybe sometimes people actually recognize me for comics in the real world, which is, you know, always flattering and very shocking. But just think if you created, like, you know, if everybody knew what Matt Groening looked like off the top of their head, and everyone said, can you draw me Bart Simpson? every second of the day when you're buying groceries or you're you know, at a restaurant or you're in the bathroom or wherever in public or in a ballpark. And everyone's like, oh, can you just draw me? Oh, just for me, just one, just really fast. Really fast for everyone in the world is not really fast.
Sure.
It also makes you, like, never want to do it again. So.
Yeah, that's why
there's, like, fine line.
Yeah, and why I think there's definitely should be considered, I've been a big advocate ever since I've had a platform to talk about this, and especially after working for the WWE for a while and meeting some of the guys, I've been a big advocate for having guys take time off just to recharge. I mean, these guys are going nonstop, and it's not just, I mean, the wear and tear on their bodies, but it's also mentally. I mean, I know I work a 9-to-5 job, and you come home and you're exhausted. I mean, imagine being on the road for five, six days and then coming home and then just having to repack your suitcase and go and do it again. So
I know what it's like to go to San Diego Comic-Con and work, like, fly in on Tuesday morning, and I'm not off until Monday morning when I leave. So it was always fly in, get your booth packages set up, you know, set up all your merchandise, get all your art stuff together, get your badge, you're doing meetings, you're doing interviews, you're meeting with editors, then the convention actually starts, and then you're on nonstop, signing autographs, drawing pictures, selling stuff, doing panels, doing signings at different booths, doing art demonstrations, all sorts of things, you know, then afterwards going out to dinner with other editors, trying to make deals. It's all very, you know, it's a good, you know, it's the place that you used to be able to go to make things happen, but and I realized I was getting like 3 hours of sleep every night, and that was, and I would, you'd feel weirdly numb after like 3 days of it. And I can only imagine knowing that these guys fly into a city, they drive into a city and they go to the arena, or they work out first and then go to the arena, and then they start doing everything they need to do for all of the social media or app stuff or different shows that are going on. There's photo shoots, there's you know, working out matches, doing whatever kind of things they need to do, prepping for stuff, then performing, being on TV live, doing all this, and then more often than not, getting in a rental car and driving 5 hours to the next place you're supposed to go for 5 days out of the week and 300 days out of the year or whatever. I can't imagine how they stay, you know, positive, because there's so much, just the travel has got to be so much stress. And I have no idea why the WWE doesn't hire tour buses for them with, like, sleeper buses for everybody, because that has to go from one place to another if it's where they have to drive, so then everyone could sleep. It would be like on a sleeper car of a train. Your performers would be rested.
Yeah.
Maybe they're worried that, like, a bus would overturn and then everyone would die. But, I mean, you make enough money, and the people that are performing for you should not have the added stress of, like, rushing to the airport and going places. Like, Vince McMahon, you got a plane. You should get another plane, and it should have all your dudes on it, and it should be flying them places, because it's like a movie studio of old days where you find someone with potential, and now you've made them into this commodity for you. You've got your training center where everyone is optimally working on their physical fitness, and you're working on promo stuff with them, and you're doing this and that, and they have NXT.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, the next thing that they should do is take better care of everybody, make sure that everyone is well-rested and focused on what they want to do. You know, what would it take? Like, 5 buses to get nearly all the performers comfortably, so that way everyone wouldn't be like just on top of each other. It could easily be outfitted that way. Spent all that money on a Senate race. You could spend that, like, half that much money on the dudes that work for you.
Yeah, and it's not like it's unprecedented. Basketball teams do it every single day. They get on the bus and they go to the next city. I mean, it's the same idea, and it's just two different two different sports. I mean, you can call wrestling sports and you can call it entertainment. Either way, it's still the same idea. I did have a question for you in there somewhere, and I totally lost it during something.
Oops, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You gave me
my
job, and I'm doing it too well.
I was actually taking notes on something, and then I was like, wait, I had something, and then it was gone. One thing I did want to say, though, and if you want to keep it on the down low, if you ever wanted to go to Disney World or Disneyland, either one, just give me a shout, and I can get you some free tickets to get in there for the day. So,
aren't we online right now? Aren't we live? Oh, no. I want to go to the Haunted Mansion. I've never been.
You've never been? Yeah, you need to go.
No. that's all
yeah,
I want to do. That's all I want to go is there. Is the Haunted Mansion. That's it.
That's my one. That's my one Mick Foley. My Mick Foley is
the magic power.
Considering I work at ESPN, so I work underneath the Walt Disney Company. So we get certain perks that are nice that are only allowed to us. So it paid off in the past 7 or 8 years. The 50% discount and stuff like that is nice.
I will totally be taking you up on that. Do not worry. When someone offers me stuff like that, I don't think they're blowing smoke. So I'm like, yes. And when I offer stuff like that, I totally mean it. So I will definitely, if I'm down Florida way, I'll be like, hey, pull me up some tickets.
No problem. That's not a problem at all.
And I want to meet, and I need to meet Tigger again. So. My face.
Now they all have times where they have to be at certain places, and you have to wait in line in order to meet all these people. They don't walk around like they used to. Awful.
Oh, right. I must be very warm.
They
just
warm literally.
Oh, actually, I even heard there are little fans in there too.
Yeah, they do, and they have a whole completely off topic, but they have Disney when they built Disney World, they built it on top of what was considered a bunker, and it's all underneath the park where characters can get from one place to another, so you don't see them just walking around, and they don't have to be stopped, and they don't have to be photographed everywhere.
Oh, that's awesome!
And yeah, and it's like they can, like, they can take off the head or use the bathroom or get changed into a different character and stuff like that. But it's a whole working underground system that is all, like, air-conditioned and everything else, where they have the dressing rooms and things of that nature. And it's really cool to see because it is directly underneath certain areas.
It's funny,
parts,
like, all these giant heads of characters, like, sitting down, or, you know, just like a giant taxidermy shop with, like, there's a Pooh and Tigger and Mickey and Goofy. Oh, where's the bodies?
I had that the other day, just sitting in the ESPN cafeteria. We had a bunch of college mascots on campus, and they were all having lunch. So they were dressed up, but their heads were just laying on the separate table, and they were all just eating lunch. And
that's a
little
photo.
Weird to see. It's always weird when we walk in and there's just like 20 mascots sitting in the green room, but when they're out of character, because once they put the head on, they just start doing whatever the hell they want to do. But when they're all just sitting around in the green room and you know these mascots and what they do, it's a very surreal feeling sometimes of where you work. And I know you work out of probably your studio most of the time, and It's a different experience. And I remember well, that I was going to say, but okay, you go ahead first. I'll remember it this time.
Do you remember your question?
Yeah, it was. We had Rob Jenninger on last week, and we were just talking to him because we were one of his first interviews when he started the Kickstarter campaign to paint the Champions collection and get involved with all that, and now he's on WWE.com and he's working with them 24/7, getting stuff signed and getting some
release
for their auction site. Yeah, it's insane. In just a year I've known him of how he's been able to transcend all that just into that world where, like, our first interview, I think we talked about, like, why wrestling, why he, maybe I just had to point to teams to die, and then all of a sudden those were the points that were selling the most, and that's just how it kept going. And it's funny to have that interview with him where he's not really starting out his career, but kind of hitting the stride of his career, and hearing stories from you who have been everywhere and have worked for all these different companies, and hearing all the different ways that people want to look and what Rob has yet to look forward to, and I kind of wish I'll be able to send him. Well, I will be able to send him this show afterwards and just say, "Hey, here's a glimpse into your future, and you keep going the way you're going," because people are starting to pick up on his name apparently anytime he is around somewhere. Plus, he's a giant, so that doesn't help much when you're trying to blend in the airport. But I do want to get on to our topic of this week's show. Justin has been patiently sitting for 45 minutes listening to us talk. our topic, we decided, since we were able to get you onto the show and it kind of fit into your wheelhouse, was the top three ring gear / entrance attires. Things that the WWE guys have worn only at WrestleMania. It was stuff that was they made specifically for WrestleMania, or you only saw it at WrestleMania and they never wore it again. There's something that really stood out for you at WrestleMania, and you kind of connect that to a memory or to an event and something of that nature. And I think going back and looking back at the earlier WrestleManias, obviously there wasn't much to go on. But in recent years, in the last 10 years or so, it seems to be the trend to have something new and something different to go on every year to make your experience.
Special gear for WrestleMania.
Everybody's looking for something new.
Yeah, I mean, you want to stand out. If you're going to be in it, you want to have something that just doesn't look like what you, or is not something that you wear every single week. Maybe you could wear it after that, but I think it's important for WrestleMania to have something over the top or sparkly or something way memorable. So, like I said before, of course, the really awesome robe that we designed for Brian for 2 years ago. I'm really sucky with, like, numbers of WrestleManias. I'm not good like that. A bunch of years ago, I would have been able to tell you, you know, I was much better even, like, just telling you numbers of comics. Like, I could go, oh, back in, you know, original, the John Burns with Claremont X-Men, like, 129 was my favorite because of, but now I've even lost track with comic numbering. So to me, I'm better able to pull out, you know, oh, I love the, you know, Hellboy story, the corpse in the iron shoes, or this, that, and the other thing. So this is my WrestleMania picks are going to be like that. It's just going to be, like, about the outfit, and one of, like, the Uber wrestling nerds is going to have to, like, fill in the number, because I know they're out there. They're able to do that.
I have Wikipedia.
I mean, I know it was...
So.
I know it was right before he passed away, but the WrestleMania where, wasn't it the WrestleMania where Andre the Giant passed the torch to Hulk Hogan, and he was kind of so injured with his hip and his back and stuff, he had to be wheeled out in like a giant cherry picker, but they made a little ring out of it. So I think if you're an awesome giant in the first place and you have to have a truck bring you out, that's pretty good ring entrance gear. Even though it's not super flashy, that's kind of like the old school equivalent of, oh my God, here he comes, and he's being brought in his truck because he's enormous. Is a pretty good one.
I believe everybody came out in that because they didn't think the wrestlers at that time would get too winded by the time they got down to the ring because they made it so big.
That's true. Yeah, really. It was like, you know, that would be like, hey, walk a mile before you get into the ring.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe jog a couple. So it's not too long. You guys only have 12 minutes. But, I did bring that up. I was just watching Princess Bride the other day, and I noticed for the first time the back brace Andre had to wear during the shoot because he couldn't carry anybody. He couldn't lift anything. His back was that bad. It was the first time
surgery. Well,
yeah.
He had just had surgery, and so things were still healing as far as, like, he had a giant incision in his back and stuff like that.
Yep. Yeah,
I love that
movie. That is all time. That's my number one book, and it battles out depending on my mood as far as number one movie. That movie is amazing.
It is such a good movie. But I'm glad you said the book too, because I love that book.
It's funny. That was the first gift I gave to my wife. It was like our fifth or sixth date. We were supposed to go out on a date, and she got really sick. She had a bad flu, and I sent over just like some flowers, some tea, and then I sent over that book because I said, this is my favorite book, and I know that you're not going to be able to, you're not really able to do much, so hopefully this is a team do a little bit. And she read it, and then we've been married for 6 years now, six years. So we have two kids. So it's one of those. It not only is my favorite book from the beginning, but it's also it holds definite sentimental value now too. It's pretty amazing what something like that could do, especially when it's translated from an old fairy tale, which was conceivably very boring. And William Goldman was able to turn it into something pretty awesome. Now that we're on Princess Bride, maybe we should get back to our top three and get into what the topic of the show is. As always, what we do is we have our guests give their number three. And we all react and talk about it and hopefully be able to describe it if we all remember it at the time. I know all of mine are rather current, so I would hope we would be able to remember them. But and if we don't, obviously then we're very memorable. But we'll just have to go with that. But like I said, we always go with our guests going first. So, Joe, why don't you give us your number three, and then Justin, I promise I will let you talk first right after.
Okay, so I went Brian with WrestleMania robe, Andre the Giant, because Andre the Giant, and it's hard for the third one, but Rey Mysterio always has such kick-ass WrestleMania gear. We pop like crazy whenever he wears some superhero thing at our wrestling, our WrestleMania parties. All of us comic people were just like, no, he did not just dress as Captain America. Oh my God. And then we're freaking out every time. And now we're anticipating, what superhero is he going to be now? That's so cool. But I loved when he was like the Aztec God or warrior with that big headdress.
Oh, the Avatar guy?
Oh,
The West Wing is 22. When he won the championship.
Yep. Aztec. It was like big Aztec feathered headdress with like the like sun the like Mayan clock kind of on the headdress, and then the whole like kind of warrior thing, the warrior like loincloth type of deal that went down over his regular gear. Super colorful.
Yep.
Crazy. I was like, going, oh my God, how did, you know, how did somebody make that? They must have gone blind trying to do it. But I like it because it's ostentatious and he's a little guy, so his costume always has a big impact. And so,
yep.
like, I don't know. It's like, I think I've lost count of how many costumes that I look forward to. Like, what's he going to wear? You know, like, he has to be in it. Why? Because he has to have something cool to wear. So that's,
mm-hmm.
that's like, my third favorite. I wish I could say more women, but I'm trying to think of women that have been in there for stuff. And I have a big problem with the one, they're not represented most of the time during WrestleManias. And then a lot of times, like, I was like, oh, like, Hoochie Mama's outfit is not working for me. But
I don't have it on my list, but the only woman I can think of that would probably make the list was Trish Stratus when she was rocking the suspenders and the fedora and with the long pants and everything else. And I'm like, that was something different. That was something different that it really caught the eye. So you actually said my number three. That is actually going to be my number three for Rey Mysterio. That outfit. Well, it kind of had a sense of that value. That was the only WrestleMania I worked, so it stands out in my mind. And he came to the ring to POD, and they were playing live. And he went up on the stage, came down with it. I mean, it was huge. And then for him to win the world title, after Eddie Guerrero had passed, it was a great moment, and I think that added to it. Some of his other ones in recent years have been rather weird. He did the Avatar Pandora one that I thought that was kind of off base, and then he did the Joker one. I don't think really lived up to what he expected it to be. That one just kind of fell flat for me. I don't know. Justin, what do you have to add to Ray's Aztec Warrior gear? That's me in 22.
Oh, yeah, Ray's Mysterio's ones have always been kind of, like you said, hit or miss. That one was pretty good. He had Captain America at WrestleMania 27. That one,
mm-hmm.
that one turned out really well. I think he was the Flash 1 year, too, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember what year
mm-hmm.
it was, but I think he was the Flash at WrestleMania. Yeah, but I'd argue with the Joker one. That Joker one was just way off, and then it led to that really random and weird JR joke I think he made about Heath Ledger. So, yeah, that whole Joker one was just weird. So, yeah, the Rey Mysterio, it's almost like every year kind of like you expect Kofi Kingston to do a spot in the Royal Rumble that's crazy. Now it's what's Rey Mysterio going to wear when he comes out for WrestleMania. So, yeah, no, he's definitely one of those guys that has a unique one every year. And, Matt, I just want to say thank you in advance for bringing up my number three previously when talking about Trish Stratus.
Nice. I'm surprised, though. I really am surprised that somebody put that on their list. But go ahead if you
want to
expound on it a little bit.
Yeah, no, like, I kind of like how she, as, like, a woman wrestler, kind of tried to fit. It was WrestleMania 21. They were going with the whole Hollywood kind of thing, and they had doing all those big myths and whatnot and trying to be big stars. And she kind of, you know, tried to pull off, like, a semi-type of woman's tuxedo, I guess, maybe. Like I said, I'm not a big fashion expert, but she had, you know, the white shirt with suspenders and black pants, kind of like symbolizing what somebody will wear as a tuxedo. And she came out originally with a, I think, like a fedora-like hat, and she pulled it off, as Trish Stratus can pull off pretty much anything that she puts on. So that's how I like that it kind of fit the whole Hollywood kind of thing that they were going with, where kind of she trying to kind of get like the women's tuxedo type thing going on there. So that was my number three.
Yeah, it's a shame that whenever you watch that match now, unless you have the original copy of the WrestleMania, unless you recorded it off of pay-per-view, that match, you lose, I think, the last 5 minutes of it just disappear thanks to Mickie James. And I could see why that's an awkward moment, and WWE doesn't really want to...
That's wrong.
Was that?
That was WrestleMania
22. Oh, no, that was
22.
That's right.
Yeah.
That, yeah,
21.
Chrissy Hemme. Okay.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
Why is it not on there?
No, I was thinking of the WrestleMania 22 match with Mickie James when Mickie was kind enough to go with the badge claw in order to break a headlock, and then did the whole
lick
for the camera and everything else. Yeah.
I guess I didn't see that year. Oh, my. Much more attitude area.
Yeah, that was the year, the whole thing of her being her stalker and everything else. And
I remember. I just don't remember that bit. Wow. I don't know how I would have blocked
like
that
said,
out, but I guess
it did. Like I said, that's been one of those that's been kind of erased from history because it's not on anything you watch for WrestleMania 22 anymore because they just kind of cut away from it, and all of a sudden they're on the ground. But I agree with you. I thought that was a nice step for. I mean, she was.
Oh, there's got to be a whole website devoted to that somewhere. I'm sure that somebody's got that, like, isolated, and there's a GIF of it someplace out there. I'll have to Google that later. Oh, God, maybe I won't, because if I do that, God knows what will come up. So.
All you have to do is probably just Google Mickie James Trish Stratus WrestleMania 22, and I think that you'll probably get anything you need. But, besides that, I agree. That was a nice little, it was a change of pace having somebody, a female wrestler, not somebody, but having a female wrestler come out in something that wasn't, like pasties or something overly revealing, but still sexy and still able to be functional on top of it. So I think that's a great pick.
That is a really good pick. I wish I'd thought of it. Darn it.
Well, apparently you blocked out WrestleMania 22, so I could see why you didn't think of it.
I did. Well, no, I was thinking about Trish, and I was trying to, like, because I've always liked stuff that Trish wears, and I'm a big Trish fan, but I was so concerned with, and I remember that costume specifically. I just, you know, like, in my head, I was like, I couldn't remember, and I obviously didn't do my homework as far as, like, go online and research things. I was trying to think of things that I could think of off the top of my head. But I was like, okay, and then I wasn't sure if that was for WrestleMania or for something else, because it was such a nice gear. I was going to say costume, but then I was like, wait, that's comics. Gear is wrestling costumes.
It was kind of the same thing. I have no idea how to title this episode, so I'm going back and forth between everything. I'll throw out my number three because it was Rey Mysterio, but I did have a backup just because I thought Rey might have been thrown in there at some point. But mine's actually extremely current, and it's current as in this last WrestleMania, and it's CM Punk's WrestleMania 29 gear. And not just the shirt that you designed, which I will tell you pissed me off royally because not only I had the shirt, I was very happy with it, but the fact that he debuts the shirt at WrestleMania and then comes out 2 weeks later and then leaves TV for like 3 months or whatever it was. It was like, oh, come on. He comes back to all new stuff. But that wasn't the part that I was thinking of. It was more of the fact that he came out in his own typical wrestling gear, but it was in Undertaker's former colors. It was in the purple and it was in the gray. And I thought that was a great, great little touch that probably a lot of people didn't pick up on. And it just seemed like something that, Punk, and he was probably dying just to, like, you know what, I can do this, and nobody really knows, it doesn't have to be ostentatious where I throw an urn or a cross on it or anything like that. I can just change up the colors, and people actually get it, and I thought that was absolutely
he's
perfect
really
for that
good
match.
Like that, though. He's really, really good like that. I mean, I think all of his pay-per-view gear is, like, some of my favorite gear just because of all the thought that he puts into it. The colors always mean something, whether or not he's got Hawks, you know, themed Punk gear on for the Blackhawks, or, you know, when he was in Brooklyn with pinstripes for New York for the Yankees. And that takes, you know, and I don't know who makes his gear, but, man, they must turn it around pretty quickly. So when he wore that gear for WrestleMania last year, we all marked out on the couch. We were like, oh, my God, this Undertaker's colors. Oh, wow, that's so subtle. You know, because it is subtle.
And funny, because I was there, and I'm sitting around people, and I'm telling my wife, how cool is this that he's actually, like, paying homage to the older Undertaker, not so much the one that you see now. And it was like nobody around me understood what I was talking about. And it just kind of killed me a little bit on the inside. I was like, that's the one thing about WrestleMania. It's like you go there and there's a lot of people who are the wrestling fans, but you can really test them on just the past 5 years and they probably don't know what they're talking about. But, Justin, did you have anything else, anything to add in 29? Because I know you were there as well. I didn't know what your reaction was to the gear, if you were able to see it from your seat.
I saw it. I honestly didn't really connect too many things together until, obviously, just mentioned it right now. But, like Joel said, did a good job of matching up. Even right after the death of Macho Man happened, the next Monday on Raw, he was wearing Macho Man theme type. So he's very good, very current, keeping with everything that he does. So it's definitely, like you said, people just recognize him mostly for the remember his entrance for the, you know, the hoodies and the T-shirt that he wears, but people forget that he actually does a pretty good job trying to stick with current events. So, like you said, with pinstripes, when he was fighting against John Cena in Boston to kind of be the heel there. So he just does a good job of that.
Yeah,
I mean, we always look forward to his gear, too.
it's funny that you mentioned the Macho Man one, because it's one of those, like, I turned around in my office and I'm looking, and I have they released the limited edition of CM Punk in the gear he wore at WrestleMania. And then they have CM Punk Macho Man 2-pack that he was wearing the same gear, and Macho Man is wearing something very similar and things like that. And you're looking around, like, he is the guy that is really looking to pay homage to the past and the guys that came before him. There's not too many guys out there right now that really think that deeply into it. It seems like there's a lot coming up through NXT or even some of the newer guys on the roster, but Punk definitely stands out. I just saw a Batman Rey Mysterio. So he was definitely Batman 1 year at WrestleMania.
let me interject just as far as paying homage to older wrestlers. Brian always, whenever he makes a suggestion for some of his gear, he always references a wrestler, like an awesome old school wrestler, like the gowns, or not the gown, the robe from WrestleMania 28, he originally came to me and he said he wanted a robe like Cully Blanchard wore. And so I was like, okay. And I said, how long are you going to wear this robe? You know, because at first we thought he was going to start small and we would get three robes in before his WrestleMania robe, and he would go from Tully Blanchard to Ric Flair. But they didn't give him that much time. So there are three versions of that robe where they get glitzier and glitzier and glitzier. And because of whatever time constraint, he chose the most, the not the most ostentatious. Well, maybe it was, because I did three different versions. So because he knew, one, the lead time it was going to take for it to be made, and Robert turned it around pretty quickly, all things considered. But then he also knew that the angle that he had planned out in his head wasn't going to be able to progress, quote-unquote, as slowly as he wanted it to. He was going to have to jump straight to, like, almost within a matter of, like, 1 week and less than four shows to being this, like, really kind of egotistical dick of a guy. And so the robe had to reflect that by the, you know, almost immediately. But he's, there's other gear that he's mentioned, you know, based on things that I've done, but he, the things that he brings to it are pretty old school references, and I think that's, you know, really good mix for him.
Well, if anybody was going to do it, it would probably be Brian Tipley. Just, I mean, you know, you obviously know he's been around the world, a student of wrestling, knows what he's talking about, knows what everything is that's going on. He knows, but for him, it's like his name, like as far as ring gear wise. Doesn't always pop into my head because, I mean, especially now where it's just the most current T-shirt and trunks and boots. So it's very old school act in the fact that nothing has to be elaborate and it's not that big a deal. But, like I said, when I just brought up the CM Punk thing, it's even something subtle like that really can make an impact as long as you do it the right way.
Most definitely.
But, moving on to number two, Jill, did you say what your number two was? I did not get it if you said it.
Who, me?
Yes.
Oh, I did say, I'm choosing Andre the Giant. Just in the coming out in the cherry pick and ring, I know that he was wearing just his regular black, but I consider that part of his gear at that point. And I thought, you know, that's fairly impressive. So.
Okay. It was an accessory type thing, but it's something that I think a lot of fans look back on and look back on fondly as far as the mini ring bringing people down to the arena. And I still remember the story of when they did it the following year. It was either that year. No, it had to be that year. And Roddy Piper's broke. And they were trying to fix it, and they couldn't get it to fix. So he just popped out of the curtain and just started jogging down the ring, and he didn't realize how long it actually was, and was kind of blown up by the time he got down there. But Justin, do you have anything to add to it?
No, I just had something that I actually had to add to it. One of my honorable mentions was going to be Bobby Heenan's all-white tuxedo that he wore at WrestleMania 3, which was kind of funny because, you know, Bobby Heenan always liked to go, you know, dress up, and anytime he had the, you'd always see him with the sparkly glitter brain or Heenan or Bobby Heenan written on the back of it. I just thought it was funny how he kind of went over the top of that, and to the ads of the whole, you know, going down to the ring and chair picker thing, one of my favorite images is just going back with Bobby Heenan with his head in his hands. You just see one of those times where, during those times still where people just do garbage at stuff, and you just see Bobby Heenan's head in his hands and random cups and paper and all that stuff going thrown at him, which is kind of just funny for me personally, because how much I love the Bobby to bring Heenan character and what he did. So he was on my, that was his shoot from that WrestleMania was on my honorable mention list.
Yeah, and for me, too, is, like, that's one of those battling matches and instances and moments, but that was really the last time we saw Andre be Andre at least as best as he could. The following year, he had a quote unquote match with Hulk Hogan that ended rather quickly in the WrestleMania 4 tournament he didn't really do very much, that they just kind of glossed over because he couldn't really do that much at that time.
I don't think he could really move.
Yeah, it is. WrestleMania 3 really was his kind of swan song, and like you said, Joe, the passing of the torch between him and Hogan. And to get Andre's approval from everything heard over the years, I mean, once you get his approval, you were good. So that was a big deal. And that was definitely, it was his last moment. It wasn't his last moment, but I think it's the moment that I would want to remember the most as far as him being in wrestling.
I was going to say, he went from being the most beloved to then the most hated, because he was like, okay, you're going to be the babyface. You're going to be the top guy. But that means everyone's going to hate him and throw bottles at him and stuff, because he gets to be the mean giant instead of the lovable giant. But, I mean, I love reading things and even hearing Hulk Hogan talk about that match or other people, just by saying, you know, like, if he decided, even in the last minute, that, yeah, maybe I'm not going to lose now. It's like, nobody's going to be able to move him. No one was going to be able to do anything. Nope. It's like, to be able to lift him up and slam him, he had to not only, you know, he had to jump to do that. And still, he's like 700 pounds jumping. So, you know, like, huge props to Hulk Hogan for even being able to catch that and move him. And, you know, it's like, that is monumental in its history for wrestling, as the feat probably was to do, you know. He had to really make that decision and set wrestling off into the course it goes today, because if Hulk Hogan didn't become that guy, none of this would have probably turned out the way that it did. I don't think anything would have gotten as big as it did.
Yeah. And it is funny, because I remember the interview you were talking about, and Hogan not even knowing until he got into the ring. Like, he might have gotten a word or two from Andre during the day, but not really knowing in the ring if he was actually going to win or Andre was going into business and just taking it on himself. But, I mean, I don't know how you go into working a job like that and thinking, I don't know, I'm supposed to be doing one thing, but I don't know if the other guy's going to cooperate, and if he doesn't cooperate, I'm screwed.
Because wouldn't that be like just trying to perform wrestling on a tank or something? I mean, the movement, like, he could do everything he was, you know, scripted out to do. Okay, now I'm supposed to do this and then try everything, but then at some point it would be futile if he kept trying to do things and couldn't move him, and then what happens? You know, like, what does he do? Does he
leave
the ring?
Yeah. Like, all of a sudden, Hulk Hogan isn't the superhero to all the little kids anymore. He obviously can't beat up and take down the giant, so he can't be that great of a wrestler or a role model. So, if Andre didn't agree to that, like you said, we probably wouldn't have seen Hulk Hogan as he is today. We probably wouldn't still be seeing Hulk Hogan even. It's definitely a moment in history that stands out. I think it's even in every opening package. Justin, we didn't get your number two.
My number two is going to be Shawn Michaels' entrance here that he wore for WrestleMania number 25 in his first match against The Undertaker. The whole entrance was kind of unique in general. They were playing up the whole, you know, as Shawn at this point, everybody knew that he was, you know, he's a born-again Christian, that he had found God, all this documentary. So I find it kind of funny that, you know, his entrance from WrestleMania 25, he came down from, like a pedestal all the way that was pretty much to the top of the Titantron, and it came all the way down, and he had his hands out like he was kind of portraying the angel, godlike character, and he had an all-white suit coat on, or almost like jacket. It wasn't a suit coat. It was an all-white jacket, and he had his all-white hat on, and that whole thing. Even when you want to put in The Undertaker, too, he kind of did his whole thing where he came out from underneath the entrance ramp, like he was coming from hell, you know, playing the whole heaven versus hell kind of thing. But for me, it's mostly, you know, Shawn Michaels thing. He's somebody that, you know, he has a bunch of different ones for WrestleMania. He had, you know, his WrestleMania 12 gear, and then I think he had a couple others somewhere down the line. But for me, his WrestleMania 25 was my favorite because he kind of used the gear itself to play into the whole, you know, rivalry with The Undertaker, talking about how he's like the heavenly one and The Undertaker is, you know, the dead man who rises every single time. So Shawn Michaels is, from WrestleMania 25, is my number two.
Well, that's awesome.
No, that one.
Once again, wish I had
that one. That one didn't even pop into my head when I was thinking, trying to think back and look at different WrestleManias. Like, one that's sitting on my shelf is they put out a two-pack of Shawn in the white, and Undertaker in the black. And, yeah, I thought that was awesome considering their storyline. And that was their first match before the retirement match, which I still consider WrestleMania 25 the better of the two that they had during WrestleMania. But that great choice. Going on to my number two, a little unconventional. Don't know what the reaction, your guys' reaction will be, or what other listeners' reactions will be. But I chose Edge from WrestleMania 23, and it was his match against I'm thinking it's WrestleMania 22. It was his match against Mick Foley for hardcore match at the All-State Arena where he came out with just the Edge work shirt on and the jeans and the skull belt buckle or whatever it was. It was the first time we saw Edge not in the long trench coat. And, I mean, he had been the Rated R Superstar and stuff like that, but this was the first time it was kind of like, okay, this guy could be considered a badass and really – try to hammer home the point that this was going to be a hardcore match. It wasn't going to be a wrestling match. And that's one big problem I have when anybody announces a street fight or a no-holds-barred match or something like that. Shawn Michaels used to be great at that, where he would come out in jeans and cowboy boots. And hardcore matches, yeah, anything goes. Why would you come out in wrestling gear? And Edge got that and came out in that style and in that look. And I just think across his time in WrestleMania, and he's had some major WrestleMania moments, this was the one WrestleMania which was dramatically different than anything else he wore throughout the years. Jill?
That is true. If you're doing a street fight match, you might as well look like you're wearing your street clothes. And I think it should just be in the parking lot, which would be hard for everyone in the ring to see. But I really think they should. I mean, I love when those things go outside, because then to me that means anything really goes. Like they kind of, you know, run past guys that are, you know, filling vending machines and people that are doing makeup and stuff in the back. I like that. I mean, one of my favorite matches was in the Super Bowl halftime when Mick and The Rock fought in an empty arena. Oh my God, that was, and right through the catering and all this kind of stuff and selling every single thing. I could watch, and you know, you're making me want to get this WWE app now, because it's like all the stuff I want to watch again. that I don't have online or don't have on tape. I mean, I suppose I could just go to YouTube. But yeah, that thing was a great match. And that, to me, all street fight matches, and even if it's a WrestleMania, it's like, you've got the audience there. Go in the audience. You know, I know there's probably liabilities that they have to be aware of, but to me, it's like that would just make it all the more fantastic. It's like an EC, like an ECW match, when if you go to ECW and you might end up with RVD in your lap if you're in like the first three rows, because he's gonna like fly off of there. I mean, I can't remember how many of those things I went to in like the first four rows on any side of the ring where just somebody jolted up, and people would just get up and push themselves back because somebody was coming over. The Sabu would be, you know, flying at you, or you know, you'd get somebody like Mike Awesome and Tanaka going through. So WrestleMania should be pulling out the stops like that. Not that you want anyone to get hurt, but to make it so much more personal, because, I mean, it's probably the least personal pay-per-view you can ever see or attend, because it's got so many more people in it than would be at a regular pay-per-view event or a television event. And you've got people that are, of course, in a place they would never be able to see anything, but you might as well give the people that are closer to the ring something even crazier to talk about.
Well, I think the flaming table at the end of the match might have whetted their appetite a little bit for that one.
May have ended up having a flaming Mick and a flaming Edge coming at you.
Yeah. And that was after Edge took the bump on the thumbtacks that nobody thought that he would take. I mean, I personally think that match solidified Edge as a Hall of Famer, but just to show that he would do anything and actually play out a story on top of it. I mean, just a couple months later, him and Mick were best buddies at the ECW One Night Stand thing, and they had that whole storyline going on. So it was a cool time. It had a lot of little storylines going around that I think a lot of people missed out on. But I liked
the more elaborate storylines very much.
Yeah. Justin, did you have anything to add to that one?
Just kind of as Richard put, like you said, I think, you know, as a street fight, you should be made to go out there and kind of, you know, look tough compared to what your normal street gear, where your ring gear is. And I agree with you, Sam. I think it not only, like, I don't know about Hall of Famer, but I think it definitely solidified Edge as a main event player going forward, because remember, just recently that January, he had cashed in his Money in the Bank contract, if I remember correctly, and then lost his Cena right away again, like within 2 weeks of cashing in at the Royal Rumble. And people really weren't, you know, too sure what happened there. And then he went out and had this great hardcore match with Mick Foley. And like I said, I think as far as being a big-time player in the WWE going forward, that definitely did that. But I agree with what you said. Like, if there's, like, a pre-advertised couple-week streak, that kind of, like, similar to Extreme Rules 2012 when it was in Chicago, and CM Punk and Chris Jericho fought, and they both wore, like, you know, those ratty jean shorts to the ring. I mean, Chris Jericho still wore his sparkly jacket, but that was just kind of playing to his character. But during the match, they both were wearing, you know, their jean shorts to the ring, kind of making it seem like it's a street fight, which kind of makes sense.
But
so, I definitely think
that didn't Punk come out with one of his friends' T-shirts on, from what I remember correctly?
Yeah, some drug-free T-shirt.
What T-shirt was it?
It was I can't remember the friend's name. It was on his DVD, but it was one of his female friends' T-shirts that I did not look like it fit him at all. It was like plastered to his body, and it was like one of those straight edge, joke free, but it looked like it was maybe a men's medium, and it was not. Definitely not CM Punk size, put it that way, but he wore it throughout the match, and it was interesting to say the least. But it is those type of guys who seem to get it, like guys like Shawn or Edge or Punk and Brian, guys like that, and who seem to get the idea that something as little as wearing a pair of jeans, or like when Brian was part of the Wyatt family, coming out and wearing the jumpsuit instead of wearing his gear, And then, I mean, look at the moment that he had once he took the jumpsuit off and he had his gear on underneath. I mean, that place erupted. And it is because of these little simple touches that you might not notice, but like just subconsciously you're picking up on it, and you're picking up on the fact that, hey, this guy doesn't look as he usually does. And then when you draw attention to it, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes a lot more sense. Jill, I think we blew over your number one, so why don't you go into that one again?
Pardon?
You're number one.
My number one, I've said it a bunch of times. Yeah, no, we didn't blow over it. I keep saying it all the time. It's Brian's robe from WrestleMania 28. It's because I'm, of course, I'm.
No,
that's my favorite WrestleMania gear
world.
So far. Yeah, or Daniel Bryan. I call him Brian, but I thought you were talking to our. Because I'm getting an echo.
It's also kind of hard because I have Jill and Justin on the line. So it's like, if you only hear the first syllable, I can get a bunch back. Bring it down to WrestleMania 28. Obviously, and we talked about it. So far, is that the only gear that you designed that has been WrestleMania specific?
Usually the gear that I'm trying to think if he's worn anything else to a different WrestleMania. Some of the first gear that I designed for him was supposed to be WrestleMania, and then he got put in the dark match with Sheamus. Then I think the second set of gear was also put in the dark match. And then rumor had it that even this match that he was in, he was going to be put into the dark match, but then he wasn't in the dark match, but then it was 18 seconds. So
they worked it out.
So I did design other gear that was going to be in WrestleMania. It just didn't show up on WrestleMania.
Now, have you gotten a phone call for this year yet?
No, I have not. So there's some gear that there's some designs that he's had for a while, because he hasn't changed gear in quite a while. He's used some of the same designs that I've done that he's worn in the past that he's liked. He's just had different versions of them made with like some different fabrics and things like that, which seem to fit his character. I mean, as his beard has been growing, you know, the stuff that I used to design was like, I like to make a jacket. I like to make three pieces for him because I thought, but right now they always want him to sell T-shirts like everybody else that has a T-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, even if I had designed something with a jacket, he's got one of those T-shirts that they made for him that becomes the third piece, you know, as the default. So he's got some stuff in the pipeline, and whether or not he's chosen to make some for WrestleMania, I can't say until WrestleMania comes out, because I won't know until I see it.
Now, did you make the jacket that I'm trying to remember if it was an Extreme Rules event or something, but it was like an army-looking jacket with the DB on the back?
Yeah, that was something that he wanted to do. He wanted to do something really anarchist, so really simple.
Because it was very different.
It was completely different, and it was very, like, Vince hated it. He, like, freaked out when he wore it during that, and that's why you never saw it again. Because, you know, he had the whole no gimmick, yes gimmick going on, and suddenly there was this, like, really different type of thing out there. But I just, you know, I designed it as to what Brian wanted, and then Robert made it, and Brian, you know, it got there in time for that pay-per-view, and he, you know, like new gear, he always kind of wanted to view it as a pay-per-view, is the way that we seem to work it.
like you'd save up, you'd wear something for a while, unless it was like a big character change, and then you would want to wear it for TV. But most of the time, you want to have something cool for the pay-per-view. And
right.
Like one of my favorite jackets that or gear that I ever did was when he just started the whole yes, yes, yes thing, and that very night that the fans took over, that like when he won, he got up there and he started chanting yes for the first time, and then suddenly the whole audience started doing it. Like he texted me, you know, like an hour or less after TV was off, and said, "I need to design me gear with yes on it." You know, so anything that we had done before, like there was a really cool set of gear in the pipeline that got, you know, he has the designs for, but it got scrapped because it became the thing. And then at one point in the middle of yes, then no happened to be the thing, so stuff that I had designed with yes on it suddenly was like, I need you to change all the yeses on here to no's, and I need to know that's kind of like, you know, like a version of the font of yes, and so we did that. But I did a jacket when with him, like with a big cutout of him screaming no, no, no on the back of it,
mm-hmm.
which was a white jacket with a red Brian face on it, and I liked that one because Robert made it look, you know, it was exactly, you know, the way, main event gear is like they make it look like my drawings, so it's like there's no variation whatsoever. He sticks to what I do, and he trusts what I do, and it always looked great. So I'm really excited. But, I mean, because there are things like that happen, Brian's got all the designs and Robert has all the designs, and if Brian chooses to have something made, that's completely up to him. So there's a lot of things that I've designed that no one has seen because, you know, either because of the way his character is or like Brian said, well, I really just haven't been paying attention to getting gear lately, but I've still, you know, we still had designs that he had talked about that I had delivered for him. So they're there, and he maybe, you know, like all he has to do is have them made and they could show up. It all depends. But as his beard has grown longer, some of the stuff that I've designed, you know, it's like the beard is obviously the focus. So you don't really necessarily need type of jacket that I used to design when he had the short, you know, short crop beard.
Right.
Because to me, it's like, where's your focal point? What's it going to compete with? And also, do you want to, like, I don't want that beard to get caught in the zipper of a jacket. That would be awful.
Oh, God. Oh, oh, that just gave me a bad feeling because I have a beard as well. Ow. Now, is that the robe from WrestleMania, is that your favorite piece among everyone that you've been able to make, or is there another one that holds a little bit higher standard in your mind?
Oh, man. See, I have an awesome big portfolio that's just filled with designs I've done for Brian, and I'm all really happy that I have them all. But I choose the robe because it's the most elaborate and it's the glistiest, and I like it for the showmanship, and I thought it was a spectacular translation from drawing to actual creation. But I love them all when I do them. I mean, it's like I'm creating an outfit that I think looks good on him, and it does, and that's something I'm really, really proud of. So I like them all for different reasons because they all are made for like specific character points.
Yeah, and hopefully if this match is for longer than 18 seconds, maybe you'll actually get an action figure out of the deal too. And Kevin is WrestleMania gear.
The best part is a lot of his action figures are all wearing my gear. I was lucky enough to be at Toy Fair last year, and I went up to their Mattel was doing their presentation, and they did WWE like special figures, like, and there were three of Brian, and all of them were wearing gear that I designed, and I was just super happy. I was like, not only are they cool figures, but they're wearing my clothes.
I'm guessing it's the no, no, no with the no and DB on the back.
Yeah.
It was like the ones with the, when he first, the first ones with the beard. It seems like that they started going full out Daniel Bryan.
They should make that little beard out of, like, fur. It should be, like, a real beard, not just a plastic one. It should be made out of some weird hair. That would be awesome.
I remember they did, I think it was Jack did that for George the Animal Steel for one of their, it was, like, one of their Comic-Con exclusives. But they made his chest hair, real hair. And I was like, don't know how I really feel about that, but that's pretty cool. I don't know if it would come out of packaging, but that's kind of cool.
Like little troll hair or something, like, you know, those little troll dolls, soul dolls they could do.
Exactly.
For hair. But, I mean, so many of those guys would have it. I mean, all the Wyatts would have it. And But, you know, why not? It's just, it would be another limited edition figure, like real beard Daniel Bryan.
God, you just gave Mattel an idea. Justin, we didn't get your number one. What do you have?
My number one is going to be the Ultimate Warriors ring gear for WrestleMania 7. Going into that match, it was him against Randy Savage. It was, you know, supposed to be a career-ending match. Obviously, that didn't pan out. But I thought Warriors ring gear going into the whole thing was just pretty well done. He had his, you know, jacket on, and it had himself and the Macho Man on one side, and then his knee pads. He had one with him on there and one with Macho Man on there, and then his trunks on the back of it had a spray paint of the WWF title, and it said it means much more than this with the caption around it, considering, like you said, they were both putting their careers on the line at the time, and obviously Macho Man was back about 6 months later wrestling. But, you know, I thought it was a good job playing into the whole, you know, retirement angle match itself. It's still my favorite Ultimate Warrior match to this day. I could go back and watch it anytime. Just the whole story they tell during that whole match was very well done. And like I said, I just like the fact that his ring gear, pretty much every single part of it, played somewhat into the storyline of the match. So that is my number one.
Now, I'm curious to know if that was actually Warrior's idea or if somebody was like, yeah, you should probably wear something like this because it would probably get over really well. I don't know because it doesn't seem like even Warrior that's not in character has linear thoughts. So I'm not too sure. Jersey, remember that outfit at all, if that made an impression?
That one is beyond my remembering at this point because I know regular Ultimate Warrior outfits, and I'm trying to think how much fringe was on that one. I'll have to look it up.
There's a lot. That was the one on his... I was going to say, I think that's the one that on his knee pads, he had Warrior on one knee pad and Macho Man on another knee pad. It was pretty much airbrush galore. I don't know how many more.
I'm not a
fan
of airbrushed gear.
Thank you. Finally.
I'm not. I mean, I can't stand Ryback's gear. It's like a low-rent RVD gear, which I'm not a fan of either. It's like I'm not a big fan of that at all. Not just because I can't do airbrush really good, probably because it doesn't look like very good airbrush. I'm not a fan of that kind of art. It's not even as good as fan art, you know? Sorry. It doesn't mean it's not your favorite, but it's just not my favorite type of thing because it's probably very, like, if it's got faces on there, oh, my gosh, then it's going to be great. I'm looking for it right now. I don't want to.
We had a whole argument about whether airbrush was good for wrestlers or not, and I think Justin can back me up. I went on at least a 15 or 20 minute rant about how bad airbrush is for pro wrestling and how many people are using it now, and it just drives me nuts. And I was the only one that was trying to just absolutely crushed this idea of airbrushing being good. So thank you for somebody backing me up on that one.
Oh, man, look at Sensational Sherry. She is, like, Macho Man, Sensational Sherry, and the Ultimate Warrior. That's, like, and, you know, I take it back. Look at them all together. That's, like, some awesome wrestling gear straight on there. That's worth everything. But, I mean, like, I don't know, you know, because if you're wearing just trunks, this is my problem with, you know, designing for trunks is a really hard thing because you don't want, well, to me, it's like you don't want to put a design right there on their package. Because you're trying not to draw the attention right there. So if you're going to have like a face or something airbrushed right on your junk, someone's really going to have to peer at that and look at it. And to me, it's kind of distracting. I'm trying to find it, something that's more close up because I can see it and it just looks like I can't tell the detail on it because it's on trunk. You know, it's not like it's on... The, like, you know, at least with RVD and Ryback, they have their whole back and front to deal with. It's not just...
Still, to me, whenever I see airbrushed ring gear, I just think that they brought their singlet down to the local mall and had a guy in a stand just do it for them and then and wear it to the next show. I mean, that's all I think of when I think of airbrushed ring attire. It drives me nuts.
But now you're making it more attractive to me. To me, that's like, okay, then that's kind of funny. We just went to the local van shop, and then they're like, here, just put a picture. Here's a picture of Randy Savage, and then I'm standing here, and here's me. So put me on this pad, and then him on the other knee pad, and then both of us on the butt or whatever. And it's like, you know, you never know what you're going to get. It's like the guys you see who have tattoos of their kid on their arm.
Oh,
and
God,
you can't really
awful.
Tell. It's like the ugliest baby. You're like, oh, the baby is deformed. But then you realize, no, it's just that the person who drew that tattoo can't draw, which you find a lot, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm getting my, like, third, fourth, my third tattoo in May, and I just made an appointment with the guy that did my Celtic cross because I'm getting the Celtic Tree of Life. And I called on it, and I'm just like, no, I don't want it to look like a real tree. I don't want it to look like it's actually this thing. I want it to look like Celtic art. And it just seems like a lot of people want things to look so realistic. And I'm like, no, if you're putting art on your body, you want it to look like art. You don't want it to look that realistic unless you're going for, like, a landscape or something like that. So, yeah, I get what you're talking about. And this tattoo artist, too, also, he's earned a reputation, at least on the East Coast, of being very good at cover-up. So he gets a lot of clients to come in with those bad children's face tattoos and to ask to make it into a dragon or whatever he can do with it, just to cover it up. Cover up that black and white ball tattoo.
Some good airbrush stuff though. I mean, there's been some good, like Jimmy Hart with a Hulk Hogan on him, and what else is in here? I mean, I don't know. It seems like, you know, they have much more room to work, which therefore gives you a better thing. And there was, looking up Ultimate Warrior, there's Ultimate Warrior where he was wearing a singlet that looked like just muscles, which is pretty cool and also creepy. Why didn't he wear that to WrestleMania? That was much cooler.
I think he wore it because he was out of shape. But, I don't know. I just think airbrushing, especially something that's going to be seen at WrestleMania, or, I mean, now you have RVD and Ryback running on every week and things like that. I don't know. I know RVD has his own guy that I guess he goes to every time to get it done, but it just looks cheap to me, and I don't know. I'd rather have a guy like the Big Show who will just come out in a black singlet and have more character to him than something that is dragons and yin yangs every quarter inch on their ring gear. But that might just be me. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure back in the day it was probably, you know, it's like airbrushing or silk screening, you know, were options, but it depends on how long you want that stuff to hold up. I can't imagine that those things are really color fast or, you know, if they had them, they had to do a lot of washing them in the washing machine, they would fade out. So maybe it was like a quick way to get something cool.
And also, I think back to that time when guys rarely wore anything that wasn't just a plain trunk or whatever. I mean, it was all there's a reason why Ric Flair became so famous for his ring robe is because it was something different. And it was back then, it was really just whatever trunks and knee pads and boots and then whatever you wore to the ring. And, I mean, Macho Man, it was just stars. I mean, it was as simplistic as possible. So Warrior was able to go out to and got something different, and it absolutely stood out. I mean, he stood out no matter where he went just because of the character he was, but that was definitely something that I, and from what I remember, that was wasn't the first time, but I think WrestleMania 6 was the first time, but it was one of the first times he wore really airbrushed attire. Before then, it was more of just like his face paint or whatever was just stitched into his trunks. So it was something new for him too. So, just go back to,
because he has a very impressive character. I mean, so it's like, looking at him in that gear, whether or not you like airbrush, that was like an awesome outfit and it was impressive.
Unfortunately, as much as I hate airbrush, I always loved Jake Roberts, whatever he wore out, and most of his stuff was airbrushed, whether it be on the Medusa on the side or different things on the side of his pants. But he always had pants to work with, so it was, I guess, a little bit more going on to it. And you think about Rick Rude, too, who he had the whole feud with Jake Roberts where he put Jake Roberts' wife's face on his crotch. So going back to what you're talking about, drawing your attention to one place, he did that on purpose. But, yeah, that was all airbrushed. That was all 1980s and early 90s. Also, Warrior is a big enough character as it is. Like, did he really need to have all of that on top of it? But, hey, who am I to judge? I'm not the millionaire, and I'm not the one being able to live just on my ranch and by myself and not have to worry about it and can pay for my kids' education. Going back quickly to my number one, it was mentioned before when Justin was talking. It's Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 12, and not only had the whole zip line entrance and everything else, but it was the white trunks, the white kind of glove things he had on. Not only was it the Iron Man match, but it was one of those, it was like you hear the boyhood dream has come true and stuff like that, and automatically that flashes into your mind and that image of him and the white trunks and shoulder and everything else, and he really did. And then the entrance attire too, where he came in with a different coat on, which I think eventually turned into like a red DX coat. But at the time, it was Shawn Michaels. It was absolutely all Shawn Michaels. But it was one that really, I think, stood out. It looked like a WrestleMania type of a WrestleMania worthy gear to me, I guess I should say. It's kind of like the Oscars, or you think the Oscar gowns and things like that. It looked like a Big Show type of feel for me. Justin, I know you mentioned WrestleMania 25 and through 12 a little bit here, but what do you have to add?
No, I agree. I agree. It's kind of, like I said, similar to what I thought to Trish, she kind of stepped it up a little bit because it was WrestleMania. And like you said, you know, pretty much from that point, from his whole career going up until then, he had kind of stuck to the similar, like, you know, white and red or black and red type pattern. But this time, because it was WrestleMania, he kind of did it a little differently and was very much almost all white for his big boyhood dream moment. So, yeah, no, like I said, that was one of my honorable mentions, too.
And, Joe, do you remember that one? Or are you Googling that one, too?
That one I'm not as familiar with.
it's basically just Shawn Michaels in white. It's white and silver.
I'm trying not to go online to look it up because then I won't hear what you say. But I should look that one up. I haven't seen all of WrestleManias.
That one is a hard one simply because it's the Iron Man match, and I mean, myself being a fan, I've only seen that match barely a handful of times just because I can't sit through an hour of just chin locks and headlocks and just rest holds. So, but yeah, that's why I mean, the reason why it made my number one, it's simply because like I said, it's like you hear those words, the boyhood dream come true, and whether or not they show the footage of it or they don't, and I know they use it a lot for the WWE Network now, but it automatically flashes in my head, and I can picture it and picture him with the belt or raising his arms and stuff like that and being in the white and being in the silver, and that's what
okay, now I okay. I'm looking at it now. I'm seeing it. I looked it up because it's like I know that match, but like sometimes things get so mixed up in my head, and he's worn such sparklier things. But wait, no, that's maybe that's not the right one.
It started out with the elaborate zip line with the coat and everything else, and then
when he comes down on the zip line?
Yeah. Yep. That
okay.
One.
All right. Because I was thinking of something completely different. And because he always has the things. Well, when you say elaborate costume for Shawn Michaels, that's white. There are a lot of things that, you know, my brain is thinking of, and.
This is past Heartbreak Kid era where it was like flat white and red and like bleeding hearts everywhere. This like to me looked more classy. I guess, like I said, it was a little bit more big event feel or big match feel kind of. That's just one that's etched in my mind, and I tried to go through and I tried to like pick out like either a Bret Hart or something like of that nature, somebody that another legend, even like the Undertaker and stuff like that, and none of those guys really. I mean, they all had different things, but it was never anything that was WrestleMania or anything that really. Stood out. I would say the only thing for The Undertaker that can really stand out for me was this past year when he had the urn on the side with Paul Bearer's name and the date on it. I thought that was a really nice touch, too. But
unfortunately, Paul Bearer could, like, even in death, made sure that he put The Undertaker over even more by being the best manager. It's like, I can come out dead. So, I was going to say things, you know, about any Undertaker WrestleMania match because, like, I've always loved, you know, I love the old, you know, like, hair in the eyes, completely dark entrance with the crazy hat. And, I mean, Paul Bearer is probably the best ring gear ever as far as coming out when he's alive or when he's dead, you know, just, oh, my God, you know, every louder was was exceptional. Managers are the best ring gear. I miss there being more flashy managers or crazy mouthpieces.
Yeah,
that's a good
accoutrement
to have, that along with the rest of your gear, because I think that counts as part of your ring gear. If you have someone that does that for you, that's part of your ensemble.
It just, I think the idea is that it's managers don't sell merchandise. And, unfortunately, that's hard to think of because it's like Bobby Heenan now sells merchandise. Paul Heyman has his own T-shirt. I mean, these guys could go out and make you money, and they still kind of stay away from it. And it's hard because I agree with you. It's a manager, even somebody like Paul Heyman, when Paul Heyman was with Punk, he wasn't really a manager. He didn't do much, but what he did was just enough to put Punk over the edge as far as being, I mean, he was already a main eventer. He was already a big-time star, but it put him at a level of an Undertaker where they were able to have a match at WrestleMania, but they had matches before, but they were only on B-level pay-per-views when they were, like, SmackDown only or something like that. So managers do make a difference, whether it's just their presence or whether they are the mouthpiece, as like Bobby Heenan or Jimmy Hart or guys like that, who are desperately needed nowadays for guys like Ryback or guys who like the new Alexander Rusev and guys who can't really talk in the ring but are imposing or are impressive. They just don't have the mic skills. It's a lost art. It really is a lost art. It's a shame that it's faded as much as it has. Before we wrap up the show, I just want to say, first I want to thank you again, Joe, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad we could work it out.
Yeah, we love having not the normal guest that people expect from on a wrestling show. Like I said, we do a lot with Rob Schamberger. I'm good friends with the guy who runs WWE Creative on Twitter. So it's like we have different people that come on, and it's not always we're able to talk about different things, and it's always nice to get a fresh perspective from somebody who is not entrenched into the day-to-day type things or entrenched into what wrestling is or has to be and has their own opinion on stuff, but can bring a different style and different thought process to the show, especially a wrestling-oriented show that a lot of people listen to for something different and not just the basic reviews or fantasy booking that a lot of shows put out there nowadays. So, again, thank you for coming on the show. And is there anything you wanted to add before we sign off?
I just wanted to thank you and just mention some of the things that you said. I still, you know, it's like I don't want to pick apart wrestling too much. You know, I still enjoy a lot of it. I'm entertained. I still want to be entertained by it. I know a lot of stuff that goes on behind the curtain, but I still fall victim to what I hope that they do best. There should be kayfabe, right? You know, it's like I don't want to know how the magic tricks are done, and I don't want to know everything that's coming up, and I don't read the dirt sheets, and I don't want to know all sorts of stuff in advance because I like those shocking moments or those exciting moments that happen. And I hate, you know, it's like I really like hearing shows that talk about wrestling, but when it's just like constantly picking it apart, I don't think that does any favors to the people that work in the industry or the people that are listening. You know, it's like I think there should be a little mystery to it, and I hope to come, you know, like when I'm on a show, I want to be there because I'm enthused about it, you know.
Right.
And I was enthused about doing this topic, so.
Awesome. Well, I'm very happy that that we were able to live up to your expectations. And I'm glad we were able to finally work this out. And like I said before, if you ever feel the need to give Mick Foley my phone number or Twitter handle, go right ahead.
Well, maybe we have to go to the Haunted Mansion together. We might need tickets to Disney.
Hey, I'm all for brides. That's fine with me. But that being said, we need to sign off. Once again, this is the HCC Inside Pulse Wrestling Pulse Cast. We will be back next week with former wrestling. Next week we will have former wrestling or former WWE writer Andrew Goldstein on the, coming back onto the show. I forget the topic that we have going on for him. It might be biggest surprises for WrestleMania. That I believe that's the topic that we will have next Thursday night. We're also trying to lock in two more guests before our WrestleMania before our WrestleMania pre-show. AJ from Tough Enough, you might remember him, you might not. Give him a look up. He's still working in the independent scene, as well as our good friend Rob Karpulis from WWE Creative on our creative-ish on Twitter. We'll probably be joining us again to talk about biggest storyline letdowns in WrestleMania history. So we have a lot coming forward. We have a lot coming forward in the next couple weeks. And hopefully you'll be here to listen to us and hopefully enjoy as much as we enjoy talking about it. Thank you again, Jill, for being on the show. And we will see you all again next week.
All right, everybody.